Welcome to the Rogue Startups Podcast, where two startup founders are sharing lessons learned and pitfalls to avoid in their online businesses. And now, here's Dave and Craig.
All right, welcome to Rogue Startups, episode 161. You'll have to, everyone, bear with me a little bit. I'm a bit sick, and I think so is our guest today, Ed Freifogel. Ed, are you a bit under the weather as well?
Yeah, also a bit of a cold. It's actually sunny here in Barcelona, but somehow I managed to pick up a cold this week.
Yeah, it's just that time of year. I think everyone is a bit sick, so it's just going around. But Ed was on the show, a couple months ago, Ed. But you're back today, and we're going to be talking all about freemium, right?
That's right. So we run a kind of freemium service, a version of freemium, and there's some pros and cons around it. So, and I know as a listener to the podcast, I know it's something you've been toying with and experimenting with as well for some of your services. So,
yeah. I mean, you know, on the Castos side, you know, our plugin is absolutely 100% free and will always be. And so that's kind of our version of freemium there. And I think overall it's really solid. You know, the term of like, you know, freemium is a marketing, you know, customer acquisition channel, not a pricing strategy. And for us, it absolutely is. I mean, Serious Assemble Podcasting is where the vast majority of our customers come from. So in that respect, I think freemium works for us. The baggage that goes along with it is the support, that we are kind of obligated to sustain for those free customers. But I think it's a relatively small price to pay for the marketing channel that it gives us.
Well, in our case, we run a geocoding service. So it's an API-based service, and our users are software developers. They're kind of relying on this as critical infrastructure.
Yeah.
And so there's zero chance. No one would ever purchase this product without first having the chance to test it extensively.
Okay.
And so you have to give people a way to test. And obviously then you have some questions about, you know, is it a time limited test? Do they have to put in a credit card when they start the test? And that's just in our market of developers. So the very, very common use case in our situation is developer gets the task of, he needs to do some geocoding, or needs to integrate geocoding into their service. So the developer then finds our service or knows about our service, hopefully, or has been recommended our service, comes, registers, tests it for a while, and at the point that he's happy with the service, at that point, then he goes to the person who can actually make the purchase. So if we were to require a credit card at sign up, I just don't think it would work because, the developer is not going to make the case that our service is the best unless he's tested it extensively. Mm-hmm. And there's no way he's going to go say to the product manager or whoever has the credit card to make the case that they should enter the credit card before he's tested extensively.
Yeah. So have you guys looked at, instead of freemium, doing a longer trial? Because if you did like no credit card up front, but a 30-day trial, they would be able to evaluate the service in the same way, right?
Yeah, the problem with that is, in our case, so what happens if we get to the end of the 30 days and the guy hasn't finished testing?
Yeah.
You know, so what are we going to do? Cut him off? And then if we do cut him off, he's just going to register again.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, we're just creating a weird artificial barrier that prevents him from doing his work. And so I don't think that's particularly useful.
And so you guys have a freemium barrier or trigger or whatever of a certain amount of API calls or data or something like that?
Right. So our service is measured. Our pricing is based on the number of API calls you make. And the product, that one approach that people take with freemium is you can have a free, let's say, basic or limited version of the service. And then if they want more features, you know, they become a customer.
Yeah.
In our case, because we want him to test, we give him the full 100% version of the service. So, you know, our API makes no distinction between, is this guy on the free trial or is he a customer? We give you the best possible answer we can every time. But what we do restrict is if you're on the free trial, you can only do 2,500 requests a day. And once you hit that limit, then you're cut off for 24 hours or until midnight. This creates some problems, though, in that what we now see are a lot of people, basically try to register multiple times. So, you know, if you, let's say you need 5,000 a day, instead of upgrading when you hit 2,500, some people, you know, some bad actors try to register multiple free accounts, free trial accounts. Yeah.
So the plus one or plus test or something like that in their email address, is that what you've seen most people doing?
Correct. There are a bunch of different techniques. And frankly, it's funny because people come to our site and everyone does like the same five little tricks thinking that they're super clever. And I hate to say it, but they're not super clever at all. Okay. It's usually pretty obvious.
So the plus, like, so it would just be like, you know, Craig plus test at castos.com would be one, right? What are some other, like, for people who might be facing this too that you've seen?
Well, this problem, we've always had this problem. So our service has been online for, 4 or 5 years now. And we've always kind of had this problem. One point I should make is that the issue has gotten much worse for us in the last couple of months because our biggest competitor, which is Google, they offer geocoding as part of their Google Maps platform. They raised their prices significantly last year, which was phenomenal for our business as it drove many customers to us. But it also means lots of the people who used to kind of use and abuse Google service have now come to our service.
Yeah.
And so it's become much more urgent that we kind of deal with this. And there's kind of two reasons. Like, on the one hand, you know, someone who's cheating, it just gives you kind of a bad feel. But also, you can't let it become the case that word gets around that it's possible to cheat.
Yeah.
You know, because you can't let that happen. Otherwise, we undermine our business. So we had a blog post that this whole conversation kind of started from a blog post that we did a couple weeks ago So one technique that many people did is they would go to these kind of temporary email services. And I don't know if you've seen these services, things like Mailinator or 10-minute email, or there's a whole host of them. And the idea is you create a forwarder. So you go to Mailinator and they give you a random address that will forward to your real address. And there are different variants. Some are permanent and some are kind of short term, one day or whatever, or 10 minutes. So that you can get out of giving your real email address to a service like ours. And unfortunately, this became so common that people are using this that we've now had the signups from these sites. And it's unfortunate because we really do a lot to try to, I think services like that have a legitimate use case in that we believe heavily in protecting people's privacy. And we have we have several different features or options. Of course, we're fully GDPR compliant. We're in a European business. Lots of our customers are European. Lots of our users are European. So we're fully compliant there, but we go above and beyond that. And we have various different privacy features. And we really collect the absolute minimum amount of information that we need. In fact, that really all we need is an email address. And that's purely so that we can then email you if you're hitting the limit and say, look, it's time for you to become a customer. And then if you do become a customer, obviously we need to send you an invoice and things like that.
Yeah.
So, but we're not really asking for, we do optionally ask for a few questions, but it's not required. You know, it's a shame because we're doing everything we can to protect the privacy of our users and to be a service that values privacy. And then you see people kind of abusing this, or they don't trust us and they put in these temporary addresses, but unfortunately, there was a high correlation between people using these temporary addresses and cheaters.
Right, right. So you guys saw like a big spike in just the number of signups that are used to stay under the API limit. How did you find those like correlating to people converting down the road? I'm sure it was lower, but like after you've cut that off, have you seen like your new trial to conversion rate change from what it was before this new surge started?
No, not so much. It's hard to say because our overall usage has changed a lot in the last couple of months because of this surge of people fleeing from Google. The thing also with our service, and this might be, I sometimes think is a topic for maybe for a talk at a microconf or something, is that our service is a utility. People don't become a customer of our service because they like me. They don't become a customer because, you know, I have good marketing emails. I mean, those might be minor contributing factors, but fundamentally they become a customer because they need the service. And it's not a nice to have. It's not a discretionary purchase. It's a must have.
Yeah.
So you either absolutely need it or you don't need it, or you need it only temporarily or whatever.
Yeah.
So actually we've, you know, as a result, we used to experiment with things like drip marketing and stuff like that. And what we saw is it really didn't work. It didn't influence because, as I said, the user is, they either need it or they don't. And it doesn't matter how convincing my, you know, I can list out all the features and all the benefits and tell everyone why we're great. If you don't need it, you don't need it.
So you guys do a fair amount of like community involvement stuff, right? Because your platform is based on an open source tool set, right?
Yeah. So the big differentiator of our service is that the data that we build our service on is open data. And that gives people, that has several different advantages that some customers really value. But it also has the benefit that there's a large community behind that.
Yeah.
The biggest service that we're built upon is something called OpenStreetMap, which has millions of contributors all around the world. And we're trying to be quite active in that community. So, you know, we're members of the OpenStreetMap Foundation. We sponsor events. We contribute back to some of the software, things like that. So, and so that's kind of brand building.
A lot of your marketing tactics hadn't worked, but you think that like involvement in the community does work? Like if you weren't involved in the community, would the business suffer?
It's always hard to know.
You've always been involved in the community.
But I do, we do see, you know, we do ask people when they sign up as an optional question, you know, how did you hear about us? And definitely there are lots of people coming because of our involvement in the community.
Yeah.
So, and frankly, it's kind of it's something we want to do, you know, because our service is built on top of it. And actually this raises a good point in that. So now what we do when someone signs up with their 10-minute email, or their temporary email, you know, we show a kind of a little pop-up comes up and says, look, sorry, we're not going to let you sign up with that email. You need to use a non-temporary email. And then we kind of say, look, you know, by playing fair, it helps us give back to the open data community. And then I have linked kind of a page where we list out all the different things that we do. And hopefully you're trying to trigger some sort of
guilt trip.
Some kind of guilt. Well, not guilt trip, but I just want people to understand, look, there are real people behind this service.
Yeah.
And you know, we are trying to, you know, we really try to help our customers. We think our prices are very fair, and that's the feedback we also get from the customers. You know, as I said, our free trial is kind of time unlimited. You know, we're not trying to trick people. We're trying to just provide a legitimate, honest service, and hopefully, hopefully people can see that and then say, okay, this is someone I want to work with.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's interesting. I think that being like a business that builds on top of an open source product, like we do with Serious Sustainable Podcasting being an open source, you know, WordPress plugin, is interesting. I think overall it's really good. Like I think most open source projects should be backed by a company because they have staying power. You know, like you guys are not going anywhere anytime soon. Even if you do, you'd sell the business to someone else who's going to continue to support it. But the danger, I think, in open source is like, some guy in his basement builds this thing and then businesses or hobbyists start building on top of that. And then the thing goes away because the guy gets tired of it.
Actually this week I was talking with some people kind of in the open source geo community, the software community. And they were saying one of the challenges that we have now is the community. Open source has become so big and so mainstream that previously it wasn't possible to hide in the community. So if you were in the community but not contributing, you know, people, you kind of got, I don't want to say public shaming, but it was obvious that like, oh, this guy's a user and not a contributor. Yeah. But now open source is so big, it's easy for people to free ride.
Okay.
You know, and so, you know, what can we do to encourage to make sure kind of the next generation of people also give back? And of course, within their means. I mean, we're a small business, so obviously we're not going to be doing the same, contribution to OpenStreetMap as a Google or something. We don't have those resources, but within our means, I think we do quite a lot. And we do that because we think it's the right thing, but of course we also try to use it as a marketing channel so that people become aware of our service and recognize that we're doing the best we can.
Yeah. You know, we've started including in some of our support replies to free plugin users. You know, they ask for a feature, or they want, hey, why doesn't it do this? Or you don't accept this parameter or something. And we started saying a fair amount, like, if you're a developer, we'd love for you to, you know, work on this and submit a pull request. We'd love to include it in the next version of the plugin. And it's funny how people's tone change when you say that. Like, we're kind of constantly adding to the free tools that we provide, which I think we should, because we're the kind of keepers and maintainers of them.
Yeah.
But I think when people come to you saying, like, hey, why doesn't your free tool do this thing? And we come back and say, hey, it's open source. If you know PHP, just, you know, write it and submit a pull request and we'll share it for everybody. Gives them a little perspective about, like, oh yeah, this is not just like you providing a free thing. It's all of us contributing to this free thing. We just happen to be the ones that are responsible for doing the most part of it, I think.
Yeah, it's a fine line, and it's very cultural, I think. You know, some people have the mentality of, I'm the customer, I pay you, you know, I just want you to solve it. Other people get the open source ethos. But I do think, in terms of all the interactions around that, it's about, one part is the message, the other part is the tone of the message.
Right, no, for sure.
And that's also, as I said, what we try to do with the people who sign up on temporary email address. We say, look, you know, we get that you're concerned about your privacy, but unfortunately, these types of services have been abused in the past, so we can't let you sign up like this.
So let's go with the kind of supposition that every business probably could benefit from some version of freemium, some level or some form of freemium. You guys do like a volume limited of the kind of full product. There is also, like you mentioned, like a light version that some people give access to. Like, as you guys thought through your use case of like, yeah, the light case wouldn't really work in our instance, in our business model, because of the type of customers we have, how would you suggest other people kind of look at this and say, like, how can they turn their business into having a freemium model?
Well, in our case, the main driver of it is, as it's kind of the try before you buy idea. People have to try it. So, you know, that's going to be different from business to business and industry to industry. But particularly when your user base is technical, so in our case, it's developers, you know, they really, you know, developers want to understand, what am I getting? How does it work? What are the features? What are the, you know, does it do this? Does it do that? And so you really need to expose it to them. I think services like yours have a much bigger advantage in that you can let people try for a certain time, and hopefully in that window of opportunity, you get them to actually upload their data, configure it, customize it, and all these kinds of things. So now if they quit, they've lost that time. And you've got a better hook in that regard.
Yeah, yeah. You know, it's interesting. I think that for me, when I look at freemium, it is the, like, getting to the point of value for free.
Yeah.
And then there's a point of better value down the line if you become a paying customer. And we're looking at pretty soon, probably, offering for Sales Camp, for our referral marketing tool, offering a free version based on the amount of referred revenue in your business. So we're probably going to change all of our pricing to be based on referred revenue into your business, instead of, currently it's based on the number of referrers or participants in the programs. So we're going to start saying, no, not, you know, the first tier is up to 500 participants, but it's going to be, the first tier is going to be up to $1,000 in referred revenue per month or something like that.
And I think that's very smart.
Yeah. I mean, we're kind of putting all of our eggs in the Stripe basket at that point, because we basically say, to use our tool, you have to be integrated with Stripe, which is fair. I mean, most people are. And I think we're going to do a free version instead of a trial, to say everybody starts and the first, whatever, $100 or $500 in referred revenue is free. So you can use the tool as long as you want. And the thing for me, as like a business owner, the thing, if I was looking at this, it says, this takes all the risk away of using this tool, because I can use the whole thing and get it set up on my site. And if it works, great, and I'll start paying money. If it doesn't, it's nothing lost for me. And I don't have this, like you mentioned, this artificial barrier of like weirdness with like a 14-day trial. And oh, if my developer's off for vacation for a week, then my trial needs to be extended and all this kind of weird stuff. I don't know. So I guess what I'm saying is like the freemium trigger is aligned with the value your product gives instead of some weird time variable.
That makes a lot of sense to me. Actually, I was listening to your recent episode talking about the struggles you've had with Sales Camp of getting people to do the integration. And that's hard because you need them to take an action. And of course you can, you know, try to make it as simple as possible for them to take the action and have a video or tutorial or whatever that shows how easy it is. But fundamentally you need them to take the action. That got me thinking, I wonder if there's a way you could do something. I don't know how you would do this in a cost-effective way, but I was thinking about services. I remember when PayPal first came out and, you know, this was a totally new thing, people transferring money on the internet and people are like, well, is that safe? Like, how can I just send money to an email address? You know, and PayPal actually did the thing where they only did it for a certain amount of time, but when you signed up, you know, they put $5 in your account.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. Maybe there's a way, you know better than I do here, but maybe there's some way that like after they integrate, you know, you trigger some like fake transaction or a micro transaction where they actually then see this is what's going to happen when a referral happens and they see it come into their Stripe account. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know how you do that and in a cost effective way. And maybe there's not a way to do it, but you know, when you have these services where there's a high barrier, so in the case of PayPal, it was trust, and, you know, people didn't trust money on the internet at that time, or in your case, it's that they have to do an integration, you know, you really need to think about how do I lower that barrier? Mm-hmm. And so, of course, one way is, of course, you making it free. So in your case right now, you have the barrier that not only do they have to do the integration, not only do they have to, which is a non-minor integration, right? Because we use Stripe and, you know, my Stripe account is the core of my business, right? And you know, I'm going to think twice before I integrate something with that, right? Do I really trust this service? And I have no doubt Stripe has all kinds of controls. And so I'm not really that worried that anything bad could happen. You've got to find a way to make that, you know, as frictionless as possible and perhaps even give them a reward. You know, like I said, like, you know, when you do it, we're going to to show you it works, we're going to put $5 in your account or something.
Yeah.
Obviously PayPal was able to do that because they had, you know, huge VC funding and that's kind of their marketing channel. And probably you don't.
You know, what's interesting. Some of our competitors charge to do this actually. So it's the opposite way around. And I wonder if there's like a psychological thing there that gives more credibility to what they're doing.
It could be because if you get set up.
Yeah. Yeah. So they have like a mandatory one time, whatever it is, $100, $500 setup thing where you get on the phone with the engineers and you guys all set it up all at the same time. I don't know. I can't imagine demanding that. I think it gets to the point of like putting the barrier up in front of people kind of squarely and saying, okay, we're going to get over this hump somehow, whether it's incentivizing them with money or saying, if you want to use our service, you have to kind of work with us to get to set it up. I know Infusionsoft still does that even after they've gotten their ass kicked in the last few years by other kind of smaller, more nimble providers that allow self sign up and stuff like that. But I think that for a tool, I don't know, maybe like yours, maybe like Sales Camp that requires a lot of integration, having like a really defined setup time and process is really important to allow your customers to realize the importance of it, you know?
Yeah. In our case, you know, they literally have to call our API. So I can't do that for them, you know, but what we can do is we've created a lot of SDKs and the different programming languages. And so, you know, if you tell me, oh, we use PHP, then I can say, all right, well, here's our PHP library. Here's the PHP tutorial. You know, here's how you do it. And of course, all of that code is open source and,
yeah,
you know, you can trust it. But fundamentally, they need to do it. And in our case, the use cases are so divergent and the different technical infrastructure that they're grappling with, you know, there'd be no way we can really do it for them short of providing the SDK.
Sure, sure, yeah.
But what we did do is we did also think of different audiences. So another good example would be, you know, the usual case is an engineer comes to us, but sometimes we do have, let's say, more the product manager or the business person, and these people are not software developers. So for them, we built For example, an integration, an Excel plugin. So, you know, they can just install the macro in Excel and then stick in their API key and it will geocode in Excel.
Mm-hmm.
And so that way they can at least see, okay, the service does what I want it to do. Now it's worth me, you know, telling my engineer it's time to integrate it.
Yeah. And so that's like a part of your service, or it's like a free tool you give away? Or
no, that's totally free. If you go to our list of SDKs or tutorials, there's one that, you know, how to geocode in Excel. And
okay.
We also have how to, you know, you can do it in Google Sheets or whatever.
Oh, that's cool. That's cool. I like these like engineering as marketing kind of things, these little free products that, they're fantastic.
Well, there is one other challenge that we see with coming back to freemium and around that by making all these tools. So we have the challenge to degree that, you know, you can use the free trial up to 2,500 requests per day. And so we sometimes see customers or users, people on the free trial who are, you know, they're using every day 2,500. So it's obvious that they're using our service in production.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And we, that's why we really try to brand our free trial as a free trial, it's not freemium in the sense that you can use it forever. You can use it forever, but what we tell people is if you're using this in production, if your business is depending on this service, you should become a customer.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Do you have kind of soft guidelines around that, or do you like?
Well, it's very difficult to enforce, obviously, because it's how do I know whether the guy is testing or whether he's actually depending on it? But obviously, if you see someone who's using it every single day for an extended period of time, you know, at some point, that's not testing.
Yeah.
Right.
Sure.
So then the question is, how do I convince that guy, okay, it's time to start giving his money?
Yeah.
Not always the easiest conversation.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then sometimes I'm like, look, is this even a good use of my time? Because, you know, me chasing someone to get them to become what we call an extra small customer, you know, is that really the best?
It's probably going to be more work than a big customer longer term. Like what's the value of chasing somebody like that? Yeah. Interesting.
But my fear is more if I let it become the standard and known that, you know, you can kind of cheat by just using the service indefinitely, you know, then we have a problem.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So we have a, and this is something that's probably valuable to other people. So now we take a much more kind of layered approach of how we treat people on who are doing free trials. So you go all the way from the people who previously we let them sign up with a temporary account and now we block them through to someone signs up, they're on the free trial, they're obviously testing, through to we see that they signed up multiple times with like the plus in their name or based on their IP address or even based on their usage patterns and saying, you know, we can see the data that they're sending us to, and you can kind of make some assumptions about that. And anyway, we can try to detect, okay, these accounts are acting in a coordinated way. And obviously they're working together so as to avoid becoming a customer.
Mm.
Through to the people who just have a low volume, but they are using depending on our service. So you have this kind of gradation and you need to figure out what is the right message for each of them. And in some cases it's blocking them. In some cases it's asking politely that they become a customer and trying to explain why they should become a customer. In some cases it's eventually, you know, then escalating that dialogue and eventually turning them off. And that's a challenge to figure out the right tone for each of these players.
Yeah. 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 So I want to ask about sort of like being on the receiving end of a competitor like Google raising their prices and you guys seeing not just a bunch of more customers, but maybe a different type of customer coming into your business now. Overall, it's been a net positive for you. Yeah, I know you guys have like new things you're dealing with, like all these new people coming in expecting stuff for free or trying to get stuff for free. But overall, it's been a net positive for you?
Well, I was joking with my co-founder. He's great and he really has solved a lot of problems in our business and puts in, made some clever things. But for last year, really employee of the year has to be Sergey and Larry from Google. You know, them raising their prices, that was just the best thing that could happen for us.
That's hilarious.
But unfortunately, obviously, it's not repeatable.
Yeah, right. They can only screw up once, right?
It's raised our volume significantly. The number of signups we get has grown a lot. Some of those people are bad actors trying to cheat us, but some are customers. And we've also had some of them are quite big customers. That also presents the challenge, of course, of bigger customers, of course, expect a different level of support, also expect a different sales process in terms of, you know, the guy who comes now, he needs to, he evaluates our service and he, maybe he likes it. And then he needs help getting it through their internal purchasing processes, you know, that kind of thing. And then what kind of ammunition do I need to give him so that he can navigate his way through that? You know, they expect a different billing process. So big customers, you know, the vast majority of our customers we built through Stripe via credit card. Obviously, when someone wants to become a big customer and they say, well, I'm going to have to invoice you, you're probably going to have to say yes. But that requires, of course, some changes in our process. You know, who do you know, did the invoice get paid? How can we, you know, some of that we're still doing in a very manual way.
So, I mean, the nice thing about those enterprise customers, if you have five of them and you only have to worry about invoicing five people a month, it's not a huge deal, right? It's like...
It is, but they're also painful. You know, not intentionally, but they're just used to dealing with big companies, you know, and they're just not, they're not nimble or, you know, or what do you do? You know, our invoicing system that sends the invoice automatically, what if it doesn't get through their spam filter? You know, you got to, how are we going to solve that? We got to chase that. We gotta, what if they forget to pay? You know, it's just, none of it's rocket science, but some of it, a lot of it's new to us, new problems for us. So it's required some adjustment on our side of changing our processes and learning.
And as a result of this, do you think you guys are going after enterprise customers more or just like taking what you get and hoping they stop coming up?
Both.
Okay.
So we are probably, I mean, it's not that we didn't go after enterprise customers before, but now that we have a few, you can use those as ammunition to get others, right? Case studies and things like that. And it gives you more credibility and you can say, look, you know, X works with me and Y works with me, so probably you should too. But at the end of the day, you know, we're still tiny, so we gotta be nimble and take what we can get. But it's definitely made life more interesting. So it's been a fun couple of months, and now we're kind of we had two waves with Google raise their prices in terms of. They announced it, and then you had lots of companies who saw the announcement and were on the ball and started looking for alternatives. And then the price increase actually happened, and then you had the second wave of people who got a big bill unexpectedly and were looking for an alternative.
Yeah.
And now, kind of the party's kind of drawing to an end because the people who are still now with Google are probably the ones who are just going to suck up the price increase and take it. So now the question. Is really okay. We got this. We moved to a new level, but now how do we keep the momentum going?
Right. Because that's a one-time event. That's not going to happen.
It's a one-time event, right? But on the positive side, we now have some more money to play with. You know, to put into marketing. You know,
sure.
So,
yep.
Cool. So let's see.
Yeah, sounds like a good problem to have, right?
There are worse problems. There are worse problems.
Yeah. Cool. So Ed, we'll have a link to the blog post you guys wrote regarding this kind of keeping freemium clean and organized in your business. And we'll link to that in the show notes here. But for folks who want to kind of reach out and get in touch, what's the best place?
Right. So our service is opencagedata.com. If you need any geocoding, please give us a try. Best way to get in touch with me is probably on Twitter. That's my Twitter handle is Freyfogle, which is impossible to spell. It's FreyFogle.
Awesome.
And based here in Barcelona. So if any listeners are in Barcelona, one of my goals for this year is to try to get more of a micro SaaS kind of scene going here. There are a couple of us and sometimes we meet up for a dinner or something. And we've talked for a long time about trying to formalize that a bit more and maybe have, you know, once a quarter have a dinner or something. And so that's a project I'm going to work on. So anyone wants to get in touch, please do so.
Yeah, I'm coming down. We're coming on vacation in a few weeks and I hope we'll definitely get together and hopefully we can get one of those meetups going. So that'd be good.
That would be great.
Awesome, Ed. Thanks so much.
My pleasure. Nice work with the podcast, man. Happy listener.
All right. Cheers.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to another episode of Rogue Startups. If you haven't already, head over to iTunes and leave a rating and review for the show. For show notes from each episode and a few extra resources to help you along your journey, head over to roguestartups.com to learn more.